Do you like food? Yeah, of course you do. Well, as a listener to the Pedestrian Podcast, you can now get a fantastic deal simply by going to www.simplycook.com. And when you get to the checkout, entering the code NFLPOD, that's NFLPOD, all in capital letters, you can get yourself £6.99 off of your first trial box from simplycook.com. What more could you want?
I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We don't go to the Super Bowl again being all right.
You're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official UK podcast for the Seattle Seahawks. Here are your hosts, Ross Bell, Stuart Court, and Adam Nathan. Go Hawks!
Welcome to the Pedestrian Podcast, still the only unofficial UK Seahawkers podcast. This week we have convened to talk about how the Seahawks stand entering their bye week, and we'll quickly look back and talk about the trip to the Coliseum in Los Angeles last Sunday night. Also, we have joined by Mr. Rob Staton for the third time to go over how he thinks the Seahawks 27 season is going, and obviously with Rob we'll dive into some draft chat as well. But to do that with myself, Stuart Court, is as ever, Mr. Ross Bell and Adam Nathan. How are we, guys?
All right, lads, I'm back.
Yeah, no more editing issues for me. I don't have to open Audacity for a few weeks.
That's all, the best present I could have brought you back.
It is, yeah. It is. How are we, Adam?
I'm probably going to violate all copyrights, but this is how I'm feeling.
Oh. Mm.
Celebration time, come on! We've done it, boys! We've gone to Los Angeles, we've beaten the Rams for the first time since the Vietnam War, and we're on the march! This is our year, come on! Okay, that's enough of that. I'm happy. It feels like the first time in about 2.5 years, apart from the Patriots game, where, like, for the week after a game, I've been buzzing, and I'm still... I wish there was a game this week. I'm happy.
At this point, I just really kind of wish that we could have, like, Rosie's instant reaction to what when she hears things like that.
Just three walls away.
So oh, okay.
Every door Head shut for that reason, so I think I might just have got... I might have got away with it.
Yeah, as Adam quite extravagantly has just alluded to, the Seahawks on Sunday night did win in Los Angeles against the very gnarly, if very different-looking Los Angeles Rams. 16-10 was the final score. The Seahawks entering the bye week at 3-2. The 16 points coming via the boot of Blair Walsh and a very rare but very welcome fade pass to Jimmy Graham from Russell Wilson. Yeah, 16-10. The Seahawks just about survived, thanks in no small part to the lack of ability to catch that Cooper Kupp displayed late fourth quarter. But Ross, it's always a sweet victory against this lot, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, we beat them late on last season, but that was after Jeff Fisher was fired. It's like the same week, wasn't it? And they weren't really in that game. That was the John Ryan fake punt game. That was great for that highlight. But this was not an offensive showcase, but this was a full-on showcase of what our defense can do. And they made Jared Goff look like Jared Goff in this game.
Yeah, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking through some of the statistics now, and if I said to you that Wilson would throw for 198 yards, we'd have two interceptions, our leading receiver would be on 37 yards, and we'd only score 16 points, you would probably think it was another stink fest. And in a way, it was, because we should have capitalized and scored loads more points. But yeah, we got one of those performances from the defense that you'll remember in a few years' time when you're thinking back about memorable plays that people have made. Mm-hmm. You'll hark back to this game as a great, great defensive performance that I'm not sure I thought they had it in them.
No, there were new names for 2017 season that stepped up, which we'll get to in a second. But obviously, one part you did be able to leave off on that offensive stat sheet, Adam, was the running game, which ended up with eight rushes and 20 yards for Thomas Rawls, nine rushes for 9.
That wasn't going to happen, but I'm delighted it did.
nine rushes for 19 yards for Eddie Lacy. The jet sweep was present again with a one, which was so close to breaking for Tyler Lockett, where he got 7 yards on, and JD McKissic with the no mean feat of having 2 rushes for 0 yards, but still having the longest of 3. So that happened. But yeah, the running game is still, even with Aaron Donald, and it is still a bit of an issue, isn't it, Adam?
Yeah, we'll discuss this with Rob later on, but I think at the minute, the problem we've got is that unless it's Rawls in the backfield, you pretty much know what's coming. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Eddie Lacy is going to be handed the rock inside the tackles, and it's not going to work. McKissic, he's either going to run, and best run in the world, he's not an in-between-the-tackles runner. So you don't have to watch out for that too much because you can stop him with your tackles. And I think Rawls is probably the only guy that offers you the slight variation, but he's not really playing that well. So I think that's my biggest issue with the running game at the minute, that at the minute it's quite predictable.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much on the nose. Ross?
Yeah, there's no spark at the minute. I think that's what's missing. The offensive line are doing an all right job considering who is playing. There's no one big, like, even 10, 15-yard rush. It's just not happening. It's all just 3 yards, 3 yards, minus 4 yards, 2 yards. It's very boring to watch.
Yeah, there's a big thing with Pete Carroll. He covets the explosive plays in the run game as well, and that just is nowhere near happening as of yet in 2017 for the Seahawks. But we'll quickly run through all the offense because, as Adam said, it was a day for the defense that the defense shined. Wide receiver Jimmy Graham, 37 yards, just the 36 more for that all-important record, which is just mainly just something to beat people up who still want Max Unger on the team. And nothing more than that right at this stage. But the receiver, Jimmy Graham, led the team with 6 targets and led the team in receiving yards. But it wasn't just his targets, it was how he was used, Adam.
Yeah, and I think that's probably 6. I know Wilson threw one behind him on third down, but I think it was 6 catchable targets for 6 catches. Yeah. They actually used him as a chain mover in the first half. I don't really know what happened in the second half. The whole thing seemed to be very much like Cincinnati in 2015, if you remember that play calling in the fourth quarter. Yeah. I'm not sure if it was play calling, but we had quite a few manageable third downs in the second half that we just weren't converting in the first. I've not had a chance to watch it back too much, but I have a feeling that Jimmy was a big reason for a very healthy third down conversion rate in the first half.
Yeah. Ross?
Yeah, he was used as a wide receiver mainly, wasn't it? I think he played two downs as an inline blocker.
Yeah, so far in 2017, Jimmy Graham has had 31% of his snaps as a tight end, 42% of it in the, well, nearly 42.9% in the slot, and 25.7% out wide, which leads all NFL tight ends. Is lining up out wide. It's something which people have called for and said, "Oh, why are we not doing it?" It appears that the Sunday was just the dam broke on it.
Second down and 4. Little alley-oop pass to Graham. He goes up and makes the catch. Touchdown, Seahawks! And every member of the offense runs to number 88. How long have the Seahawks been trying to get that hookup between Russell and Jimmy Graham on an alley-oop pass, and it works perfectly from 4 yards out, and the Seahawks put 6 on the board.
I think we said that if you want to get rid of Jimmy Graham, you can do it, but you have to have exhausted all the options first.
Yeah.
So I respect them for at least trying and seeing if this works. And look, you will get a chance with a fade to the end zone at least once a game. So if you do get the chance, throw it out once a game and see what happens. I mean, if you get him lined up against a safety who's 5'11 or 6 foot, with a 7 out of 10 throw, that should end in a touchdown.
Yeah, we saw it a couple of weeks ago where Russell Wilson threw it into row D on the fade route in the red zone. It didn't quite work. It worked a little better, obviously, on Sunday. Anything else of note on the offensive front, Ross?
Tanner McAvoy and his throw.
Well,
if he'd got it off a few seconds earlier, it was fine. McKissic was open, but
no, I think without that, you got to doff the cap to the defensive player. He read that from a minute and covered the ground pretty impressively and come down with the ball in bounds, which is just an all round pretty impressive play. But yeah, it weren't the best throw, I guess.
It's quite happy to see a different play though.
Yeah,
it's better than just the standard plays we've seen pretty much most of the time.
Conversely, though, it's one of those examples where the Rams are just so entrenched in Pete Carroll's head.
Yeah.
I mean, it was not the time for it. It was a time we needed to keep the defense off the field. And, you know, they did an amazing job in only holding them to 10 points at that stage. But at that point in the game, the Rams had quite a lot of the momentum going forward and were just coughing the ball up there. I have to say, I found that quite a frustrating play call and one that against any other team, I can't imagine he makes.
I probably agree with that. Also, talking about the offense quickly, the O-line, I mean, Fede on the right-hand side is starting to become the player that they talked about when they drafted him, isn't he, Adam?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. You don't want to sort of rake over old ground, but you wonder if he's playing like this now, what really was the point of giving him a year at right guard? but that may be just picking at things. And yeah, he's certainly improving. And you know, if they've managed to get that done against a defensive front like the Rams, who are always going to make some plays. But I think him and Odhiambo, I know their PFF rating is through the floor, especially Odhiambo, but I'd like to see that over the course of the last three games as opposed to the first five, because the first two, they all had plenty of teething problems.
There's a lot of talk, obviously, with Brennan Albert, who, as I said to Ross before we started, the reason he took so long to get in and out of Seattle cause is that just how quickly he moves now. And then, obviously, there's still talk going around of Dwayne Brown, which would really finalise the five up front, wouldn't it, Ross, if any move happened?
Yeah, it'd be massive. It's a lot of work required to get him in, but if we did, that's a very solid league, like a league average, if not higher, left tackle, which is what we need. It'd be quite harsh on Reese, but it wasn't meant to be in that position in the first place. So,
no, it would give some interesting decisions to make with Luke Jokel, who apparently is going under the knife again to scope out his knee, which is never good. And as Sam Bradford's shown in Minnesota, it's never good to have a knee operated on again within a year. So that could be something to monitor as the bye week moves on. But obviously, as we've mentioned, as everyone's been talking about, a lot of the headlines, rightly so, after Sunday, were awarded to the defense. But one man in particular, and as he patrolled Area 29.
And Goff goes out of his shotgun with a slot to his left, takes a snap. Rush comes toward him, the ball is wobbling in the air, it's picked off by Earl Thomas. He's across the 40, heading the other way, sidesteps one man, and a second, keeps his feet, runs toward the sideline. He's still on the move, and finally pushed out of bounds, far sideline. The ball wobbled coming off. I think he might have had his arm hit. And Earl Thomas, playing center field, picks it off and stops another Rams drive. The Seahawks have it in Rams territory.
But yeah, Earl Thomas, number 29, surprisingly, he won NFC Defensive Player of the Week. The surprising part of that was it's somehow his first ever weekly award. He finished the game with six tackles and one interception, which he tried his hardest to return and tightrope the sideline for about 15 yards, but he eventually got tackled. But that was Earl Thomas at his Earl Thomas best, wasn't it, Russ?
Yeah, Area 29 was in full effect. Before even he took over the game with interceptions, he made one tackle where he ran from the centre of the field to the left sideline and just launched his entire body at the receiver and knocked him out of bounds. Superb tackle. He was just everywhere. And that tackle on Gurley is just that there's no other player in the league that makes that. You can throw names at me all you want, Tyron Matthew and Eric Berry. They're not going to make that tackle. They're not going to make that play. The determination to get to Gurley and to knock that ball out of his hand was incredible. And the fact that it's not the first time he's done this exact same play before as well.
Yeah.
Superb.
Yeah. Adam?
It's more actually the concentration on that play that impresses me because, as you say, he is a bit of a heat-seeking missile and he does just look like he's just flying in, head loss, just, I'm going to hit this person as hard as possible. But to have the heads up awareness that if he stretches out his arm, I'm going to open up my arm and chop his, as opposed to just flying in at 100 miles an hour. It just shows an incredible awareness, an incredible knowledge of the game. And, you know, it's no secret that we are five times the team when he's there, patrolling everything.
Yeah, most definitely. Also, further up on the defensive front, Sheldon Richardson finally got the headlines on Sunday with two of the more impressive athletic feats. His interception was just, as you said, with Earl Thomas diagnosing the play, he diagnosed that from the snap.
Yeah.
And the athleticism to turn his body and then make the catch and come down with it. And then, obviously, he recovered the fumble and looked like the most effective running back on the Seahawks roster. But that is what, that's the sort of thing we expect to see from the investment they made, isn't it, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, you guys put a poll out at the end of the game of who was the best player on the team. And I actually didn't even think about Earl, maybe because, you know, recency bias, Richardson's two big plays happened right towards the end of the game. But I thought the awareness he showed in locating the ball on both occasions was just, he made it look so easy. And, you know, there's nothing funnier in the NFL than when a fumble comes out and it's like you got that Benny Hill music playing with him trying to pick it up. But the way he just knew where it was, just pouched them both and, you know, ran away with them. I thought he was incredible. And he paid back a big chunk of his salary just with that game alone, I don't think we would have won that game without him.
Yeah, yeah. Especially the interception, that was a big momentum, if there is such a thing. That was one that just completely quashed it at that point for the Rams, who were starting to drive the ball quite effectively. But for the Rams, while they are all different, they look a bit more incisive and decisive on the offensive side of the ball. Jared Goff is still Jared Goff, isn't he, Adam?
Yeah, I think McVay has shown himself probably to one of the better coaches in the league. And the way he schemes guys open is amazing. But ultimately, Goff's stat line is 22 completions on 47 passes. I mean, I'd back myself to get at least 20 if I could get to throw the ball 50 times in a game. You know, it's not a particularly impressive stat line. And he's the number one pick, and he's going to make great individual throws. But as a managing quarterback, I still don't see him as a guy that's ever going to be any more than just a guy that makes flashy throws. He just doesn't strike me as a guy that's cerebral enough to be a top NFL quarterback.
Yeah.
No, there's some of his throws on Sunday are all bad.
He was desperate to throw a pick.
Yeah, yeah. He threw all the turnovers, and he could have at least had two or three, four more on Sunday. But yeah, moving on, we're now, who was the, obviously, defensive star? Was, is it, it's Earl, isn't it, Russ?
Yeah, we'll go with Earl.
It is Earl, yeah, but Shaq Griffin for his tackling was superb, and also Frank Clark for making Andrew Whitworth look a right mug. That swim move you put on him, that was superb.
Yeah. Frank Clark said in the game that it was a move that he was working with all game, and he kind of lulled him into a false. Obviously, that could just be all bluster from Frank Clark, because that's what Frank Clark does. Just a tad. moving on. Now we're going to welcome.
Oh, sorry, Ian. I will just go back and say that a lot of talk at the start of the year was, you know, Clark, Averill, Bennett, and Richardson as a four. But I don't think we give enough guys enough praise to the run stuffers like Jaron Reed up front, you know, to hold Gurley to 3.1 yards per carry. You know, it's all very well having, it's like a football team where you line up with 4-4-2 and you've got two attacking midfielders and centre midfield. Mm. It looks very nice, but realistically, that doesn't always work. And I think that those run stuffers like Reed, who, let's not forget, was a second round draft pick.
Who
should have been a first. And I think he's never going to get the stat line and the sacks to make him look like, you know, an all-pro. But for the job that he's asked to do, I think him and, you know, Ruben before him have done a fantastic job for this team.
Yeah, I think I text you, Adam, on Sunday that Jaron Reed is starting to if Jaron Reed is, the glimpses he's shown, he's starting to add the pass rush skill set to his game. And if he does that, then the Seahawks have quite a defensive front and quite a player. I think Aaron Nagler talked about after the game in week one, where he was the most impressive defensive player for the Seahawks in that game. He was just immovable object in the front. And if he adds the pass rush to that, because he was known, he was drafted as a run stopper, as you said, the best run defender in that draft class in 2016. So if he can add the pass rush to that, then the Seahawks have quite a player on their hands, Russ.
Yeah, big time. They either moved right towards the end of the game where he managed to get right into Gurley's face with a man in his face. Just the power of the man is extreme. And that's also, we're not even including Naz Jones in this as well. The future is very bright if those two are your tackles.
Yep, there could be some interesting decisions made at the end of the season. But moving on with the Seahawks on bye week, we're going to look back over the first month and a bit of the Seahawks 2017 season and invite in and talk to what is now a familiar and regular guest.
Hi, I'm Keane. I'm from Ireland. I'm listening to the Pedestrian Podcast. Go Hawks.
Right, and here now on the Pedestrian Podcast with the Seahawks on their bye week and no game until the Giants in 10 days or so. We are going to catch up with someone who now is becoming somewhat of a very regular Pedestrian Podcast guest, Mr. Rob Staton. How are we, Rob?
I'm good, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on again.
No worries. Been looking forward to having you on for quite a while. I think every week, as I'm saying, should we get Rob on this week?
I think we can describe you as a friend of the show now, which is always been my dream.
Oh, good. It's good to have two friends.
Yeah, well.
That's all Adam has, isn't it, Adam?
Two's plenty, mate. Three's a crowd.
We've just quickly gone over the Rams game on Sunday. So what were your thoughts on Sunday, but also how do you see the Seahawks 5 weeks into the 2017 season?
Well, it's definitely improving, isn't it? And I think they're getting to a point now where you can feel really confident about the direction that they're going. You know, I know the first half against Indianapolis was a bit of a chore, but, you know, the end of the day, they destroyed Indianapolis. You know, it was a pretty comprehensive win. And then they got a very typical Pete Carroll's Seahawks win on the road against the Rams. You know, the manner of the victory, and you could say if Cooper Kupp catches that pass at the end and whatever, you know, if they don't throw the turnovers, then it's a different game. But the fact is the Seahawks won a game. They held the best or the most productive offense in the NFL to that point to 10 points. They shut them out in the second half. I think they were the offense played quite a conservative style in the second half, probably because of the turnovers they had in the first half. You know, they came out quite aggressive, and having Tanner McAvoy throwing a pass and stuff like that and having it intercepted probably put them in their shell a little bit. And I think they played to what the style of the game was, which was, you know, a tight contest, which was 10-10 and then 13-10. And the offense played up to that. And I think if it had been a slightly different game, we would have seen a different offense. So the offense didn't really worry me as much as it maybe worried some other people after that game. And the defense is playing fantastically well. You know, Frank Clark just looks tremendous. I just think that he's coming on so much.
Yeah.
Just had a dominant game. I mean, you just watch not just the sack fumble, but also the way that he set the edge against the run and just handled Andrew Whitworth, who's one of the best left tackles in the league, all day. You know, Earl Thomas looks great. Bobby Wagner looks great. I just think there's a lot of positivity there. And there's a couple of things on offense to work on, you know, to get the running game going, to establish one running back at least who can be consistently good and reliable is the key thing. But overall, I think things are starting to come together now and are looking promising.
Yeah, Adam?
We were talking earlier about, you know, that it's quite difficult because our running backs, whoever's in the backfield, seems quite predictable. You know what's coming when Lacy's there and McKissic, etc. Is there an idea or maybe the possibility that instead of the traditional mantra of use the run to open up the pass, with the number of quick receivers we've got, we could sort of go the Atlanta route from last year or even the Tom Brady route and use the passing game to open up the run? Or is that just not something you see this team ever doing?
No, I think it's valid. And I think that's to an extent, that is what they're doing, I think, at the moment, because, you know, Seattle's best weapons are the quarterback, obviously. It is Jimmy Graham, it is Doug Baldwin, it's Tyler Lockett, it's Paul Richardson, and sadly it's not Thomas Rawls or Eddie Lacy. And, you know, J.D. McKissic is a kind of player who's going to start the backfield, but he's going to split out wide and he's going to be involved in the passing game and process as well. So I think it is going to be a case of, in, you know, most weeks the pass is going to set up the run. I think that kind of the offense we saw in against New England last year is probably going to be the Philadelphia the following week is going to be the most, I think, the best way to go for this. And I think we will see quite a bit of that. There will be the odd game when they can just, you know, pound the run. And, you know, against weaker opponents at home, we might see a lot more of that, especially if Seattle score early touchdowns, you know, just sort of kill the game. But I think the pass is going to set up the run most weeks.
Yeah, Russ?
Early touchdowns would be nice. You mentioned Frank Clark. That play this week on Whitworth and the one against the Colts where he hurdled the lineman and then the tackle and still managed to bring Frank Gore down for a 1 yard gain, if not any gain at all. With the injury to Cliff Avril, do you think there's a chance that we don't see Avril play again and Frank Clark just takes that role permanently?
I think because of the serious nature of the Avril injury, what is most likely is that if Cliff comes back, he probably takes on the Chris Clemens role from 2013, which was, you know, maybe he does start early base downs and plays the run, and or maybe he just acts as, you know, kind of like the third wheel of a pass rush. You don't want to put too much on him. And Frank, you can't take him off the field at the moment. I mean, it's not just the fact that he is so explosive, so quick. And, you know, his motor doesn't start. He plays a 60-minute game every week. I mean, just he comes off and he's just drenched in sweat. He never stops. He wasn't just a couple of good plays at the weekend. He wasn't just a big sack. It was just he set the edge on the run. Just watch the way that it seemed like every time they tried to run to the left, Frank Clark's pushed Whitworth back 2 yards into the backfield. And it just shut down. You know, Gurley had nowhere to run. A lot of the success that they've had with Todd Gurley, I watched the Washington game, the Redskins game before the Rams game, and they had a lot of success running to the left. And if you can just take that away, it's no wonder that he was held to, you know, 40-odd yards on the day. And I think a lot of that was down to Frank.
We have quite a constant discussion about, you know, how long is this defense going to stick together? And I think Sunday felt cathartic, not the right word, but it felt like a changing of the guard had happened, and from Averill and Bennett to almost to a Clark and Richardson show. And I wonder if you think that may be what we see in the seasons to come, as opposed to the given idea in August that Richardson was just going to be a 1 year loan.
Yeah, I think it's pretty likely. I mean, they've got about $30 million of cap room for next year. And that's if the cap doesn't raise, you know, by another $10-15 million, which has been the case for a few years now. So I think that increasingly it kind of looks like this was more of a long-term plan for them. And Sheldon Richardson and Jaron Reed, who's coming along, and Naz Jones, you know, that interior D-line has got a lot of youth there and a lot of talent. You've got Frank Clark. And I think over the course of the next few years, they're going to look for, you know, another player who can play maybe inside out. Malik McDowell, hopefully, fingers crossed, is going to come back into this team at some point. You know, probably not this year, but maybe in the future. And you can kind of see the youthful look of the defensive line going forward. But he wouldn't be surprised if, I think this is Frank's third year now, so he's eligible for a new contract in the offseason. So they may feel like they can get better value to re-sign him to a new deal, you know, next offseason, rather than waiting till the end of his contract. And then, you know, the things like franchise tags, which would be far too expensive, come into play and stuff like that. So I think that there's every chance that it may be that Clark and Richardson get the focus in the offseason for new deals, and maybe, you know, other players, sadly, you know, someone like Jimmy Graham, for example, might be on the outside looking in. But I think they really have to be two priority players, Richardson and Clark.
Yeah, so in that charting, where would you put Tyler Lockett? Because he's on, he's the same draft class as Clark. Would you put him as someone to look this year or next offseason?
I think that he's perhaps a player that you could wait. For the receivers in Seattle, you can probably always wait to the end of their contract, because they're not going to put on, you know, Tyler Lockett's not going to have a 1,200-yard season. He's not going to have, you know, 10 touchdowns. So while there would definitely be interest from other teams in a player like that, he's probably the kind of player that you can wait till after the get four years of value and then go and speak to them. And I think that they probably would like to keep him long-term, especially if they don't get Paul Richardson signed up in the offseason. They do have to have some consistency with the quarterback and the receivers. So he's somebody that they probably will like to keep. But I think that, you know, because Clark, the price for Frank Clark's only going to go up. You know, the defensive linemen are getting like $18, $20 million now. So if it's that much this year, then the following year it's going to be even more. So you're kind of better off just doing it as soon as possible. I think if you look at what Minnesota did with Everson Griffin, that's quite a big contract they gave him in the offseason. But in a couple of years' time, it'll look like a bargain.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk. Me, Adam, and Ross have all been dragged into the silly, really, Facebook discussions and arguments and stuff around Jimmy Graham. And obviously, the people still pine for Max Unger and all that nonsense. But what are your general thoughts on Jimmy Graham over his time so far in Seattle and between now and whenever he may leave?
Well, I mean, it's hard not to be a little bit disappointed with what, you know, when the trade happened, you kind of like imagine. And if you remember Russell Wilson's after his rookie year, he went to the Pro Bowl, and I think he threw a pass to Vincent Jackson in the Pro Bowl and a touchdown pass to Larry Fitzgerald. And you kind of came away thinking, wow, if he had like that big dynamic target, what would he do? You know, was he going to be like an MVP candidate? And I'm pretty sure that's what the Seahawks thought they were getting when they traded for Jimmy Graham. The problem with the Seahawks is, and this is kind of important to remember, not just with Jimmy Graham, but with Sheldon Richardson as well, is that they have a way of doing things on offense and on defense. So with the defensive line, for example, it's about gap discipline first and foremost, you know, making sure that you are taking away the running game, not giving away any big plays. And that kind of holds back, you know, if Greg Williams was the defensive coordinator instead of Pete Carroll and Chris Richard, then you'd probably see like 10 sacks from Sheldon Richardson and Bennett would have more and Clark would have more. But in this system, the sack numbers are never going to be quite as high, but the Seahawks will lead the league in you know, points given away on defense. Yeah. And they'll be right at the top. So, you know, which one do you really want? And, you know, you'd rather have the points than the sack. So that's one thing on defense. And on offense, this, you know, tight end who's more of a wide receiver has never been an aspect of what they do. You know, they've with Zach Miller, they had a guy who was having 800, 900 yards, 10 touchdowns in Oakland, came over to Seattle and was you know, pretty anonymous in a lot of games and had sort of the occasional big play, but there was never the pressure of, hey, Zach Miller's not had a catch in this game, or Zach Miller's only got 500 yards in a year, which comes with the Jimmy Graham because it's Jimmy Graham. They've tried to turn him into this kind of all-round complete tight end because I think that's what they wanted. They didn't just want New Orleans Jimmy Graham. They wanted Zach Miller Jimmy Graham, if that makes any sense. When you kind of put it into that perspective, you could say, you could look at it two ways. One, either the Seahawks have just botched this completely in thinking they could do that, or two, fair play to them for giving it a try because they want to fit him into their system, not the other way around.
Yeah.
And Jimmy Graham is Jimmy Graham and he's, you know, a fantastic athlete. I think the way that they used him against LA suggests that they've maybe sort of conceded he is what he is and they're going to try and get the best out of him for the remainder of the season. That's probably for the best, especially if he's going to score red zone touchdowns, because that's been the biggest disappointment. He's just not had enough of them.
No. So they've sort of kind of found like a middle ground, and you'd hope they have anyway.
Yeah, definitely. And look, if he has 7 or 8 touchdowns for the season and 800 yards, it's not what he was doing in New Orleans, but that's still a really good year for a tight end.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Stuart and I have always said that if you are going to get rid of him, or if he is going to leave, then it's remiss to not try everything. So it does seem like what they tried to do on Sunday and using him as more of a move the chains receiver almost, because I think he picked up 3 or 4 first downs in the first half. And, you know, the fade is what we've been dreaming of for 2.5 years. And I don't know what you think about when you're watching things on tape or whatever, but it seems that when there is a play in the red zone, if he's not getting the ball, he's taking 2 or 3 men with him and opening up plenty of space. Now, let's be honest, Nick Vanette and Luke Wilson wouldn't.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, there's a lot of sort of condemnation of the way that they used Jermaine Kearse in the red zone last year. And a lot of that was because Jimmy Graham drew the attention away and Kearse would often get a one-on-one and Wilson would look at that. And it's Russell Wilson's decision at that point, you know, to see the one-on-one and go and target Kearse. And Kearse just didn't make enough plays in the red zone. That's the beauty of Graham, is that in the red zone, he will either take 2 men away and leave somebody else in a favourable situation, or you get a 1v1 against, I think he was up against the safety, wasn't he? I think it was even a rookie safety he came up against, Johnson, and for the touchdown at the weekend. And that's just a matchup you've got to exploit every time. And I think Russell had a similar pass in one of the home games to Jimmy, which he overthrew and threw out of bounds. And that was a similar one-on-one. And if Russell gets that look, he's got to execute. Because if he puts it in the area that he did against LA, then Jimmy Graham will score every time.
Yeah, Ross?
Mentioning Russell Wilson, we've not been incredibly high on his performance this season. Where do you think he is kind of in his career progression at this point?
It's a good question, because in preseason he looked great, didn't he? Yeah. And then you think, here we go, you know, he's going to have this huge season. And then even though he's healthy and doesn't appear to be in any way kind of limited, he's not having a brilliant year by any stretch. You know, he's always been a quarterback that has started slow and then has built into the season. And that's kind of like the hope that you've got to have as a Seahawks fan, is that he's going to, over the next few weeks, we're going to see Russell do what he's always done. But at the same time, there's just weird little things that are happening with him at the moment where, you know, he's just a little bit off. He's always thrown high, but he's kind of done it in a few key moments. There was some inaccurate throws. The decision for the interception against LA is the kind of thing he's avoided in his career and since his rookie year. I think he had an interception. It wasn't a similar type of play, but if you remember against Carolina in his rookie year, he sort of threw it a little bit blind and got picked off. And it was almost, I think it may have been a pick six, or it was close to pick six in that Carolina game. And that was the first time that he'd done that in my memory since that day. It's just to throw blind, to assume that's going to be open and make a huge mistake, which almost cost a touchdown, is pretty unlike him, even when he's played bad football. But there are little flashes of real quality as well. You know, the drive at the end of the half, the 2 drives at the end of the half were really good. he had this really funky looking throw where he kind of threw across his body, even though he didn't need to in the first half, where he was kind of like facing the sideline and he kind of threw it from an awkward angle and got a first down. You know, there was some bit, you mentioned that I can remember one first down and a third down throw to Jimmy Graham, which was a really nice pass. And you've just got to hope that he's going to be built into something. And the one big positive against LA is that he didn't get hammered like he has in previous games against LA. I mean, like, if you remember the game there last year, obviously he was immobile the year before, but in other games, he's just had zero time, you know, just had absolutely no time at all to throw. He's been hit multiple times and he didn't have any of that in this game. He was able to make a few plays. So that was encouraging.
He's always been a guy who has seemed hesitant to use his legs unless necessary. And I wonder if that's becoming almost to a fault now. And I don't know if it's impossible to know this, but it almost seems like subconsciously he views running as not real quarterbacking and sort of not wanting to be like a Tyrod Taylor, even though there's a time and a place for it. And if you've got it, use it. I mean, I think there's been plenty of articles recently about the resurgence of read option quarterbacking and running. And I just wonder what you think about that, because for me, it's an avenue that he doesn't use enough.
I think it's a fantastic point. It's something I was thinking about with Lamar Jackson when I was watching Louisville recently. He's having the same thing. So Lamar Jackson for the whole of last year was told that he was a running athlete, not a quarterback, and that his throw wasn't good. And when you actually watch him this year, he's trying almost too hard not to just take off and run. When he does it, you know, he just sort of dominates. He was like, it was him against NC State last week. It was just Lamar Jackson against NC State, and he kind of like dragged them back into it because nobody else for Louisville was doing anything. I mean, the receivers dropping passes, defense couldn't do anything. So he took on the team on his own. And when he was kind of playing backyard football, it was very much like watching the Seahawks trying to get back into a game. And it was when he was running around and making plays. And that hesitancy to just want to do it and use your physicality and your skills and your speed was noticeable. And now that you bring it's not I hadn't made the connection, but now that you bring it up, it is a really interesting point that Russell kind of almost wants to, I don't know if he feels like he's got a point to prove, or whether or not, you know, some of the training in the off season was about doing certain things better in the pocket, or whether he believes that, you know, off the back of that 2015 season, that the way to being an MVP or the way to get the kind of form that he wants is to play that certain way. But he's often at his best when he's just, you know, roaming around in the backfield, you know, scrambling around, extending plays, doing things in his kind of unorthodox Frank Tarkenton kind of style. And maybe he is a little bit hesitant to do that right now. And maybe he kind of needs the game drifting away from the Seahawks, as we saw against Tennessee and we saw against you know, San Francisco when they went behind in that game. He needs that adversity, or to need to chase a deficit in order to get that tempo going and to kind of play at his best.
So obviously also with the Seahawks, a lot of focus still is put on the offensive line. We said when we're talking about the Rams that it appears that they may be getting close to settling on a five. A big part of that is the progression, even if it is the progression of Jermaine Defeddy, isn't it? I mean, he's starting to look, as I said, when we're talking about the Rams game, he's starting to look like the player that they talked about when they drafted him. Is that?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I think that there's two things that have really helped Jermaine Defeddy this year, and that he seems to have mastered the uncalled hold and the uncalled false start. And, you know, we can kind of have a joke about it, but it is, if you watch sort of Dallas and Green Bay and the way that they do things, there's a lot of uncalled holds. And it is kind of like an art form, really. And if you can get away with, you know, just grabbing a bit of a jersey and then letting go at the last minute and stuff like that, then it can really help an offensive lineman. I think his pass protection's been really good. Hopefully his run blocking is going to improve. It should do, given the way that his sizes, and that was kind of one of his fortes in the past.
Yeah.
I think that we're going to see him come. I mean, it's easy to. He was a rookie last year, and you know, it's taken Justin Britt 3 years to become the player that he is. It's taken other players, you know, that bit of time. You know, Max Unger wasn't Max Unger until 3 years into his career. You know, people want to talk about him still. He was on the bench in his first year and a half, I think, of the Seahawks, and kind of it was Tom Cable who kind of brought him on and gave him a chance. So, you know, these players do need time. Efedi, I think, is looking good. Justin Britt. I think Luke Jokel's been a big positive so far, and potential there to consider tying him down and securing another spot. I think that just the question marks are right guard, because Ibushi's kind of like a guy who's like in a holding pattern.
Yeah, with him, yeah. Yeah.
And then Odhiambo was the backup. So, you know, you have to wonder whether or not is George Fant going to come back and take that position, or do you need to go and think of another plan for, you know, the next couple of years? Because, you know, can you bank on him coming back next year?
Yeah, there was talk on Twitter a few weeks ago that the most important, I think it was the moment Davis Sue said that the most important thing for Seattle to build is the interior trio of left guard, the two guards in the center, with how Wilson stands in the pocket. Is that something you've seen as, that you can see as viable, and it makes a lot of sense with how they've obviously, especially with their investments in Britt and Jokel over the summer?
That was always a feeling with Drew Brees, that, you know, he needed interior linemen more so than tackles. But then New Orleans, you know, that was kind of like a theory that people had like 2 or 3 years ago. And then since then, New Orleans have drafted Andres Pete, who was a left tackle at Stanford. I know he's moved to guard, but, you know, they drafted him to play tackle. It's just not worked out. They've got Armstead there, who they gave a huge contract to. And then they went and drafted Ryan Ramczyk in the first round last year. So it kind of suggests that they feel that tackle's important. And I do think tackle is still the most important thing, because it for someone like Wilson, he's going to need the throwing lanes. But I think more than anything, it's just it's kind of like the relentless pressure of an edge. Like when you see Robert Quinn beating Odhiambo, and like he didn't get any help for the running back, but when you see that, the ease with which he got into the backfield, it's things like that that can't happen. You know, you just got to find a way to get in the way of Robert Quinn in that kind of situation, just slow him down. You can't have a, you know, free release and then rush straight into the backfield and hammer Russell Wilson. So I still think that tackle is relatively important. The problem is that there's probably about 7 good left tackles in the NFL right now. And if you run through college football, you know, I could give you a list of probably 3 names that are going to go in the first round next year who play left tackle. But, you know, whether any of them are actually going to be work out and whether they will justify as high as they're going to go in the draft is another thing. So like Trey Adams, for example, at Washington, there's every chance that I think he could go in the top 10 or top 15, not necessarily because he's as good as, you know, Tyrone Smith, who went ninth overall, but just because he plays left tackle and he's got great length and he's athletic. So, you know, it's difficult to find those players.
Just to quickly flip it over to the other side of the ball, when Jimmy Graham, you know, didn't get cut, they were talking about dead money and whatever, but one contract that I certainly raised my eyebrows at was Cam Chancellor getting his deal. And I wonder what you think about his play so far this season. And also KJ Wright, who, another one, basically the reason I grouped the two of them, that both of them to me look like maybe they've not lost a step, but they might be on their way to losing half a step.
I'm more concerned about KJ Wright than Cam. I think with Cam Chancellor, I watched the Rams game back again yesterday, and he had one play where he just completely shed his block at the line of scrimmage and then just made a huge tackle in the open field, and you kind of think, yeah, that's Cam Chancellor. And the Tavon Austin touchdown is a bit embarrassing, but if you notice the little false step that Tavon Austin did not remind you of Marshawn Lynch in the NFC Championship game in the 2013 season, where Lynch was kind of just running up the middle, and then that kind of weird high step that he did completely threw the whole secondary of San Francisco, and he might end up getting into the end zone. And it was kind of like that false step from Tavon Austin. Just what does Cam do? Because if he commits to the outside, he probably moves inside and beats him anyway. And Cam just froze for a second. And for someone who's as fast as Tavon Austin, you know, to like a 4-3 runner here, it was too easy. I mean, he got in there. So there's little things like that. I mean, he's not 26 years old anymore. So you're not going to have Cam from 4 years ago. But what I would compare him to is kind of like our Ray Lewis, in that when Ray Lewis won a Super Bowl for Baltimore, was nowhere near the player that he was, you know, the season that he retired. But he still was able to sort of have that huge impact, and he was the heart and soul of the defense. So that's kind of why I still feel that Cam will always have an impact in Seattle, even when he's not, you know, being the Cam that we kind of came to love. KJ Wright is a bit more concerning, because when I watched the game yesterday, there was a number of times when he just felt like he was a half step too slow, or he was kind of found a little bit wanting in coverage. And there was one play that he had a really good play against the run game, where it was he actually who set the edge, not Frank Clark. I don't think Frank was on the field for this snap, but KJ just sort of came, did that job, you know, jolted back the offensive tackle and then made the play in the backfield. So there's still little things like that, but I think in coverage, there's probably, and bear in mind that the Seahawks keep 2 linebackers on the field, and it's KJ and Wagner, even when they're in nickel, you know, KJ's nearly always on the field, plays nearly every snap. That's a little bit concerning, that teams might start to look to exploit that, because he was never the fastest player to begin with, and now he's getting a bit older, you do kind of just wonder about that.
Yeah, cool. So before we move on and discuss some 2018 draft stuff, there is some chapter field passes to give away, so we're going to do that now.
Hi, I'm Terry Peppard. Listen to the podcast. Go Hawks and keep the faith.
Right, so here on the Pedestrian Podcast, we, as we always say at the start of every episode, we are a representation of the UK Seattle Seahawkers chapter, which is part of the wider Seahawkers as well. And part of that, this year we have been given some field passes, and because of the most people are going to that game, that will be for the Redskins game at Century Field in a few weeks. I think it's about a month's time, isn't it, Russ?
Yeah, start of November.
Yeah, so obviously last year about half a dozen or so, including Sean, Mark, Cedric, I believe, were part of the posse who managed to get on the field before the Buffalo Bills Monday night game, and pretty much haven't stopped talking about it since. So this year we have the following people who have been whose name has cropped up in the draw, which Cedric did a few days ago and sent me the results earlier today. So the guys who are going to the Redskins game, if you're listening, time to get inch a little closer to the speaker. The following names will be on the field before the game against the Redskins. They are Steve Deeds, Ian Hazelden, Andy Robinson, and Gordon Curry. The reason there is four, according to Cedric, is that the Central Council have been very kind and they are very happy with all the work with the UK guys do, and they've given us an extra couple. So there is four guys who will be going on the field before the Redskins game in a few weeks. Again, they are Gordon Curry, Andy Robinson, Ian Hazelden, and Steve Deeds. And I've met Ian and Gordon, and if things go right, chaps, you might be the right tackle for the start of the game. So stand in the right spot before the game, chaps. But yeah, enjoy the game, enjoy the experience, and I'm sure the guys who have been before can second and back it up how much fun and how cool it is. It's something which doesn't seem to happen over here, but it's a big part of the game, the experience in Seattle. So yeah, well done to those four guys. Enjoy your trip.
So yeah, while we've got Rob, obviously you are Seahawks draft blog is going strong. Is any names early on catching your Seahawks eye? Obviously, it's a long way to go, a long way the season to go, but any names early on?
Yeah, there's lots of guys that have had a really good start to the year. I mean, that, you know, not much point talking about the quarterbacks because, you know, the Seahawks aren't going to be picking in the top five. But Quentin Nelson at Notre Dame is just my favourite player that I've seen so far. He's a left guard, incredible player. Just, you know, dominates the line of scrimmage, really physical, plays with an edge. Just if you ever watch him sort of like pull across and then get to the second level, it's just a thing of beauty. Just he's probably the best, I would say, guard prospect that's gone into leagues in Zach Martin and has got a chance to sort of be a, that, you know, similar kind of player. There's a guy called Taven Bryan at Florida who's got the, you know, incredible measurables. When he really shines, he kind of looks a little bit like, you know, JJ Watt type player. He doesn't do it every week. I mean, I watched last week Florida played LSU and he really struggled to have, you know, the big splash play in that game, but he kind of held his own against the run. You know what LSU's offense is like, and you know, I don't think he lost the snap. He just didn't have that sort of huge sack or anything like that we've seen him have in the past. So he's another player that stood out. I think there's Luke Falk at Washington State's had a really good, really impressive year so far. He's one player that I've been really impressed with. I think there's a Price at Ohio State, the interior line, is a center, but could probably play either guard position as another player who's, you know, I think has sort of worked his way into the first round top with the way that he's played so far. Billy Price, and I do think it's going to be a decent year. It wasn't a great year for offensive linemen last year, but I think we're going to see, you know, a good five or six going in the first round this year.
Yeah, there's, I mean, you mentioned him earlier, Trey Adams is the top guy. Mm. For me, and obviously there's McGlinchey as well. Do you see those? Are those your one and two at this point?
Yeah, they'd be my one and two. I know that Connor Williams, you know, a lot of people like him at Texas, but he's been injured. He's got MCL sprain at the moment and very athletic, should test well if he goes to the combine. But, you know, Trey Adams is, I think he's going to surprise people when he gets to the combine. On the field, he doesn't look like you know, this great athlete. But I think when he actually gets to the combine, we're going to see that. And Mike McGlinchey, you know, wasn't really blown away with him last year, and I wasn't surprised that he came back to Notre Dame front of the year. But if people have heard of Harold Landry, who's the Boston College edge rusher, you know, he's a very one-dimensional speed rusher, but he's got great speed. Well, Boston College played Notre Dame recently, and McGlinchey just shut him down. They didn't face off against each other every snap, but every time that Landry took on McGlinchey, it was a win for McGlinchey. Just a completely dominant performance. And if you are a scout or a GM in a war room somewhere in a few months' time, and you want to pound the table for Mike McGlinchey, just throw that tape on against Boston College, and you'll probably convince a few people.
Yeah, Adam?
In terms of what a lot of the people are going to be listening out for is going to be quarterbacks that Cleveland can pass over in order to get another 17 picks and things like that. Yeah, but obviously Southern California and the Pac-12 has got a couple of guys in Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen who are being very highly touted. There's Lamar Jackson, Luke Falk, as you said. Is there a guy who, A, you think just taking everything away and just watching on the tape stands out as your number one? And is there something like happened a couple of years ago or last year when, you know, DeShone Kizer seemed to be the set number one pick at the end of the season, and then all the combine stuff happened and other guys break through? Is there a guy that you see maybe being a bit of a, maybe not a sleeper, but a guy that can jump from the middle second round to maybe a top five pick from December to April?
I think that the sort of the main guys are kind of well established. Josh Rosen's having a really good year. He's having to carry UCLA. They've got no defense. They're a really soft team. He's having to throw for so many yards every week because the rest of the team is so inept. So, you know, he's kind of holding them together right now.
Help a draft prospect, do you think?
Yeah, I think it does, because he's had a big win, you know, the big comeback win against Texas. It was a bit of a fortunate victory for Josh Rosen. That, you know, there was a few throws in that game which, you know, everything went his way, let's just put it that way. But that's on his resume. He's having to sort of, what you kind of look for, one of the reasons why Paxton Lynch went as early as he did is because he was playing at Memphis and the supporting cast wasn't great. So the fact that he elevated them to beating, you know, a really talented Ole Miss team, getting to a decent bowl game, you know, scouts, from what I read, love that about him, the fact that he elevated his team to a new level. And I think that's what we'll see with Josh Rosen, is that, you know, he's kind of carrying them at the moment, and he's very accurate, great arm talent. I think the range of throws that he's showing, he just looks like a really talented player who's saved his best football for the perfect time. And I think that Sam Darnold, there's every chance that he's going to come back next year.
Yeah.
He's not had a full year. You know, he came into the team you know, during the season last year, not had a full season yet this year, unless he just has his head turned by the chance to go to a team that he really thinks, you know, because he'll probably be the number one pick if he comes out. And if it's Cleveland, are you going to be thinking another year at USC or go and play for a bad Cleveland team? You know, he probably thinks USC and do what Andrew Luck did and kind of give it another year. So I think that's what's going to, as for the quarterback who could, I mean, I could give you, I think Lamar Jackson's going to go a lot earlier than people think. I just think that he's, you know, there are great similarities to Michael Vick as a playmaker, you know, just his ability to just do so much, you know, a guy who could push 1,000 rushing yards in a year to go with all the passing yards he's going to get. He's just such a dynamic playmaking quarterback who just puts points on the board, you know, whether he's running or throwing. He's just an incredible athlete, and I think a much more accurate passer this year than he was last year. I think that's something that needs highlighting. And then, you know, people are going to talk about Josh Allen a lot. For me, he's all physical tools and not enough technical quality there. I mean, he's just sort of, his decision making is bizarre at times. He makes some really strange errors. He's never, like in the way that Paxton Lynch has elevated Memphis, Josh Allen is not elevating Wyoming at all. But I do think that the one player who could rise maybe a lot more than people think is Luke Falk, because he just, some of the throws that he's made, I think his arm strength's better. I think he's making some really difficult throws. Washington State are undefeated at the moment. They've already beaten Oregon on the road. They've got a good win against them. They've beaten USC, which was a big win. Donald's looking very accurate. He's got great size. He's more mobile than some of the other pocket passers in college football. And his character is just incredible. I mean, if you just listen to interviews with the guy, people are going to meet him and they're going to say, that's who we want as our franchise quarterback. And he's probably not going to go as high as like the top five or anything like that. But if, let's just say that Washington lose Kirk Cousins to San Francisco and they're picking in the late teens again or something like that, it wouldn't be a big surprise in my opinion, if they kind of did a small trade down and then looked to take him maybe in the late first or the very early second, because I think that's kind of the area that he's trending to at the moment.
Yeah, obviously this year's draft was seen as a more defensive heavy. Is this year with all obviously the quarterbacks, some four or five top level wide receivers, the running backs they're not too bad, and obviously as you said, the defensive linemen look to be better than they were this year. That looks like it's flipping for 2018, doesn't it? It's going to be a draft to pick up offensive players. Do you see that even so far out?
I think it's going to be a draft to go for quarterbacks. I think we will see quarterbacks go very early for the teams that need them. Saquon Barkley is obviously going to go in the top five. You know, could be anywhere from one to five, really. But I do think there's going to be the usual blast of defensive linemen going there. So, yeah, someone like Bradley Chubb's having a fantastic year.
Yeah.
Short of spitting on the Florida State logo in midfield when they beat them. That was a bit strange. Christian Wilkins is a really good player. He's very similar to Sheldon Richardson, actually. You know, the kind of way that he moves across the line. Loads of energy. You know, motor never stops. Very athletic. You know, I think that he's in that kind of range. Taven Bryan, who I mentioned. You've got the two safeties, Fitzpatrick and James, who are going to go very early. Landry, that I talked about, Clelin Ferrell's a bit like Shaq Lawson at Clemson. Vita Vea is going to go very early because there just aren't many nose tackles like him that have got the mobility that he has, and his ability when he's really on it to even offer a bit of pass. Him and Greg Gaines, just fantastic. So I think that Vita Vea is going to go quite early. But then, as I mentioned, we've got the offensive linemen. I think the receivers who were coming in, you know, people like Deion Kane, for example, just haven't quite hit the spot in terms of elevating themselves to go as early as you would think. So I think receivers maybe going to drift back. I think some of the running backs are maybe a little bit overrated. You know, I don't see someone like Bo Scarborough going in the first round, for example. I think he's more of a mid-round pick. Barkley's going to go very early. Darius Geis is going to go early, but I think that maybe the way that he's banged up at the moment and he's an LSU and not having that really dominant year, you wonder about where he's going to go. And the one guy I think is worth keeping an eye on is Nick Chubb, because Chubb's not the same player since the bad knee injury, but it's important to remember that in 2013 when he did the Nike Spark High School Combine, he ran a 4.47 and had a 40-inch vertical and was the most explosive athletic player at the high school combine, apart from a guy called Speedy Noyle. I don't know if that name rings a bell. He was with the Seahawks in camp for a small while. So, you know, Speedy Noyle's 180 pounds and Nick Chubb's like 225. So, you know, and that was all the different positions and all the different people that went, Nick Chubb was by far the most explosive guy. And he's the cousin of Bradley Chubb, who looks very, very explosive. He's going to go in the top 10 as a pass rusher. Yeah. So if he is anywhere near that level of athleticism when he gets to the combine next year, if that knee injury has not dented him too much, then keep an eye on him because he could be a huge riser. He's having a really good year for Georgia.
Yeah, on running back, someone who seems to be, every time you see Oregon highlight this year, he's scoring a touchdown, is Royce Freeman, who, like Chubb, surprised a few by staying back for this year. Where do you see him landing? Is he a possible Seahawks fit if they go to try and address the running back room in the draft again?
Well, I kind of feel like his nickname's Rolls Royce, and he kind of plays that way. I mean, like he looks great, and he performs pretty well most of the time, but then every now and again you just see it and you kind of think, you know, I wish he was a Ferrari instead. And like, you know, he runs up to the line and, you know, you kind of think it's a big bang, you know, plow somebody over, and he kind of goes down. You know, the kind of the frustration you have at the moment with Eddie Lacy when you kind of want him to smack someone in the chops and he kind of just falls down on the first contact. There's a bit of that with Royce Freeman. He's better, you know, as an athlete in the open field for his size, is really good. The thing about the Seahawks is they're pretty predictable when it comes to running backs. You know, they want guys who are explosive rather than quick. Yeah, kind of 220, 225 kind of range, 5'11", 6 foot. And you can usually sort of narrow them down to the guys that they're going to like. And with Freeman, I just wonder whether or not he's going to be explosive enough for them. He may be. But I just wonder if he's going to test in a similar way to someone like, you know, I'm going to say of a Fournette type, you know, that bigger back who didn't quite have the explosive workout. Doesn't mean that he can't produce. I mean, Fournette's having a great start to his rookie year. We just wonder whether he would fit with the Seahawks and what kind of range is he going to go in as well. I mean, the Seahawks don't have a second round pick. So is he going to be there in the third? Probably not. Are you going to take him in the first? Probably not. You know, there's probably going to be other needs for the Seahawks there. So I sort of reserve judgment on that until we get to the combine, but there's definitely some players that a running back that could be of interest next year.
Okay. So obviously we're 6-7 months away from the draft. If you were to early predict a position that Seahawks will focus in on, in obviously in the months leading up, what do you see that as being? Tight end seems to be a possibility, with depending on what they do with Jimmy Graham. Obviously, Gesicki from the tight end from Penn State, and you got the tight end from South Dakota State as well. They seem to be the popular choices this early. But where do you see them going?
I think after the Jimmy Graham experiment, I don't think we're going to see a high pick spent on it. I think that the pressure that was on Graham and on the pressure to get the ball to whoever was playing tight end, I think unless there was an OJ Howard type there, then they'll probably look in other directions. So yeah. I think if you look at the trend over the last few years, it's been to go O-line, D-line with their early picks, which is, you know, a lot of people would say that's a fair thing to go for because, you know, you're building the trenches and stuff like that. So like last year was Posick and McDowell, the year before it was Ifedi and Reed, and then before that it was Frank Clark in round two after taking Jimmy Graham in the first round. So there's kind of like that's the kind of focus they've had. I would think, because you have to kind of plan ahead, if Averill's not going to be there next year, if Averill's coming to the end, and if Michael Bennett's coming towards the end of his career, you kind of have to wonder whether or not defensive end is a position they would look at. You know, keep stocking up there, keep trying to add talent. Offensive line's always going to be a talking point, and especially if Jokel moves on, you know, you kind of look at those interior linemen and wonder whether they're an option, and is there a, you know, depending on where the Seahawks draft, if they end up with a top 15 pick, then yeah, offensive tackle. But if they're in the late 20s, then we'll have to wait and see what emerges over the year, because there's very rarely a left tackle who's available that late in the first round. So I would say that they're the two most likely positions at the moment, sort of D-line, O-line, and just keep building up and building through the trenches, unless there's just that incredible player, you know, a running back or receiver or whatever, that you just, or linebacker even, you know, we talked about KJ Wright, you know, somebody there that you just feel like, oh my god, you know, the great athlete, great upside, great potential, typical kind of Seahawks player that you've got to have. But you know, it's October the 12th, so I'm going to go with the easy, safe fence sitting option of O-line or D-line.
Yeah, so I've got 6 months to keep banging the Cortland Sutton drum as well then, so that's always
yeah, cool. So you know what, I watched his last game, and he looked a lot better in that game than he did in the other ones that he's had so far this year. And he kind of has this really great frame, doesn't he? And he's more like a yards after the game. He kind of looks a little bit like Des Bryant sometimes, but you just want to, I don't know whether it's the offense at SMU. I mean, I don't know that much about SMU and their background and where they are at the moment, but you just kind of want to see a little bit more from him. But he's definitely got a chance this year to go quite early.
Yeah, they played TCU about a month ago, and there's a few plays where they had the cornerback safety, and they're bracketed by four defensive backs, so he really had very little room to maneuver. But yeah, massive thanks as ever, Rob, for jumping on the podcast and joining us and talking to us, and keep Adam quiet mainly.
No, anytime, guys. Thanks for having us on again.
So where can people, if they don't already, where can people follow you on social media?
Well, the easy thing is the Seahawks Draft Blog website is just SeahawksDraftBlog1word.com. So just head over there. There's a really good community of people there who are very active and joining the comment section. And, you know, unusually for the internet, they all seem to get on pretty well. So there's not much arguing on there. So you'll have a fun time. And as long as you can cope with the occasional tweet about South Yorkshire football and on Twitter at Rob Staten, but I will warn you, there's a lot of day job stuff on there as well, but that's where I will tweet the links out to anything that goes online.
Last weekend was tough following your Twitter, Rob.
Last weekend, was it? Do you know, I have a lot of respect for all of the, if there are Seahawks people that follow me on Twitter, I you know, fans and whatnot, then I apologize, because you the ones who kind of stuck with me during the I've had this day job and having to tweet an awful lot, then you are the true heroes, because I can't imagine there's many people in Seattle who give a toss about what's happening with Rotherham United and stuff like that. But you know, I was at Rochdale last weekend, and I'm thinking, you know, there's not many people care about this, but all the power to you guys for sticking with it.
I was going to say the same about my followers and Spurs, but I'm not sure we've even picked up one since we started the podcast, so I'm not going to apologise too much.
I'd say Cameron Carter-Vickers looks great for Sheffield United, though.
Does he really? Well, he's more than welcome to stay there for a little while longer, to be honest.
Okay.
I didn't quite cut the mustard.
I'll pass that on.
Well, I'm sure he's a terrific young family man, to quote Harry Redknapp, but he looked like he needed a few more games. But okay. Well, if we're going to lose listeners about draft stuff, this is certainly going to help us lose listeners. That is for sure, talking about Carter Vickers.
So, are you heading out to Seattle this year, Rob?
Yeah, we're going out for the Washington Redskins game, and the day before it is Washington against Oregon, so we're going to go to that as well.
Fantastic.
So it's really looking forward to that. I can't believe the time's flown by. Like, my daughter was born in January, and she's like already not like coming up to 9 months old, so the time's just flown by. You know, in a month's time we'll be out there, and I'm traveling to Seattle over the years, so I'm hoping to join the Seahawks on 3-2 when I go out there.
Yeah, and there's very few better places to watch a game as well as Husky Stadium as well. It's something special on Montlake. There are quite a few, as we said, with all the field pass stuff. There are a good dozen or so UK Seahawkers going out. I think they're doing something on the Friday night somewhere in downtown Elysian. I think they're doing something. So if you're in town, I'm sure they'd welcome you with a pint of Manny's or whatever your tipple is.
Yeah. The pint would certainly be welcomed, and and you know, also the chance to talk Seahawks as well.
Yeah.
This is the great thing, you know, about you know, there's a lot of people in Britain following the Seahawks now, and it's just great to talk with fellow fans and fellow people following the Hawks. The great thing was I knew the Seahawks were a good team when I looked out my window. I live in Rotherham, so I opened the curtains one morning and saw a guy walking across the road in the middle of Rotherham with a Russell Wilson jersey on. And nice. I kind of thought, yeah, okay. Yeah. would not have seen a Seahawks jersey in 2007 when I came back from Vancouver. So
yeah.
that was the point that I knew the Seahawks had made it.
Yeah, I've just counted the spreadsheet. We've got there's 24 UK Seahawkers at that game currently. So
wow, oh cool, we'll be good to meet up with them. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So I think Friday night at the Elysian, I think that's their plans.
Follow the green and blue Union Jack, and you won't get far wrong.
Yeah.
I'll go find them.
Cool. So yeah, if people want to get in touch with us and follow and Patreon and all that, Ross, where can they go to do that?
You get the podcast from the podbean.com/pedestrianpodcast. You can follow our Patreon, patreon.com/thepedestrianpodcast. We're just $17 away from covering all of our expenses, which has been nice. And then on Twitter at SeahawkersUK.
Yeah, and then personal ones are at Stu_Court, at RossBell1984, and at Adam D. Nathan. On Instagram is at the Pedestrian Podcast. On Facebook is the Pedestrian Podcast, and also UK Seattle Seahawks fans. Also, until next time, though, this has been the Pedestrian Podcast. We'll be back next week with me and Adam had the chance to sit down with the other part of the other half of the Pigskin Podcast, who is a Giants fan, James. So that'll be next week, but also next week, Adam. Also, we'll be going to New York, Adam.
We'll be on our way. And that can't come soon enough.
Yeah, I cannot wait. We might actually just be me and you in an empty MetLife if things continue to go as they have done for the Giants. But yeah, this has been the Pedestrian Podcast.
Go Hawks. I was going to call Rob on my own next week. So it's more than that.
That is going to do it. 12, they're bringing the trophy home. Your Seahawks Super Bowl 48 champions.